Thank you for listening to this talk, produced by the Art Gallery of South Australia.
Okay, Agsa Gana Yatunga Yuandi. Agsa stands on Kaurna land, and I acknowledge Kaurna's elders past, present and emerging. Welcome, my name is Tracy Locke. Can everybody hear okay? Closer? There we are. Welcome, my name is Tracy Locke. I'm the curator of Australian art at the Art Gallery of South Australia. And I will begin with, in 1937, 87 years ago, a 12-year-old boy walked with a friend from Prospect to the city of Adelaide and ambled his way through these spaces in the elder wing of Australian art. And it was for the first time in his life. That boy was MJM Carter, better known to us simply as Max. And Max later recollected that on that day, he fell in love with the paintings he saw. And that was the beginning, as he said, of my new world. And he was so taken by the experience, it would drive him to commit his life to forming one of the nation's greatest collections of Australian art, and to him becoming one of the nation's most transformative arts benefactors. And today I'm going to share with you a little bit about Max's life, including a couple of little unknown facts. Of course, his life and achievements are very well documented, so I thought I would tease out a few little stories for you. And I'll tell you and share with you a little bit about my relationship with Max over the past nearly 30 years and the impact of his largesse on the Australian Art Collection. But most importantly, I'm going to speak with you today about this painting to my right. It is a painting by Charles Condor titled Hayfield Giverny, France, painted in 1894. And in doing so, I'm going to just sketch out why it is I love this painting, and the reasons why I love it, but also discuss the wonder Max Carter continues to generate through the legacy of his giving. So who on earth was MJM Carter? Who was Max Carter? Well, he was born in North Adelaide in 1926, and his family home was in Prospect. It was on Wilcox Avenue, Prospect. And the family had two children. He had an older sister, Delcie, who was 3 years older. And Max went to Prospect Primary School, and he went to Prince Alfred College. He went on to study at Adelaide University, chemistry, physics, mathematics, and so forth. And in an interview that he gave, he kind of confessed he was also pretty much a coward because he was highly incentivized to complete his exams at university to avoid being conscripted into the military because at this time war was raging in Europe. His own father, Roy Carter, had served in the First World War and had been very badly injured in his legs. And so Max grew up fully aware of the horror of war. So, of course, he achieved his studies. And his first job was down at Glenelg with the E&WS department. Many of you will remember the E&WS. And he was working in the laboratory down there, testing water samples. And what I love and what I found and discovered is that at this time, as a young man, 20, 21 years of age, he bought himself a BSA motorcycle and he would fly down Anzac Highway every morning and back in the evening to complete his job. But of course, what was brewing in the background for Max Carter as a young man was the success of his father's business, Austral Steel, a merchant business. And it was going from strength to strength, and actually there was a lot of pressure on Max, really, to join the family business. He wasn't sure what his role would be there. And let's just say, it wasn't a straightforward process. But he was also very aware of his own father's largesse, if you like, towards the community. Roy Carter was not only the founder of Austral Steel, but he, through the Carter Foundation, supported Legacy, Navita, the Helping Hand Centre, and he also helped to establish the Westminster School. And in light of that, as the son of this man, Max believed that there was an obligation for him, Max, as a young man, to work towards a purpose larger than himself. And while some of us may think, gosh, it would be great to come from a family that has means, but at the same time, he actually had to shoulder the responsibility of those means. And where to with that was his biggest challenge in life. And as I say, that was sort of easier said than done. As I mentioned, he had studied science. He was interested in science, but his great passion was the arts. And throughout his early life, a tension really formed between his want to lean towards the arts, but his sort of obligations with the family and his training in science. His first ever trip overseas was in 1955. He left the family business for 10 months to travel abroad. And he recollected that during this time, his first trip away, and of course this is when you had to board a ship, and it took a while to get there and back. But he said, something touched my soul and spirit during that trip. He returned to Adelaide, and I'm referring to the period of the 1960s and 1970s as Max's life is, I'm calling it the restless years, because he couldn't really settle. But what he did do in 1961 is sort of basically one day threw in the towel at the family business and walked out. And apparently the issue at the family business was Max actually, in terms of Austral Steel, was responsible for organising the fleet of trucks and cars and logistics, communications, and he designed a new envelope for the business. And apparently he had to get approval from all of the shareholders about the new design of the envelope. And it was at that point he decided, not for me. So he walked out and he bought himself a VW Beetle and he drove all the way up to Cairns and across a country just to get away. And this period figures quite a lot of other travel. So that was 1961. In 1963, he went off to Japan for quite a long time. And what you will not know, I'm hoping, is that in 1964, Max Carter, for a short time, trying to really find his own way forward, he was a public programmer, if you like, for the Adelaide Festival. And he talks about how it was a huge task in 1964 and he was up until 3 a.m. It was exhausting, but his role as an events programmer was very, very successful and he loved it. He then went off to India for 3 months. He then went off to England for a couple of years. When he was in England in 1965 to 67, he got what I would call is a little disease called the collecting disease, because he started to go into Christie's and Sotheby's and Phillips and start to kind of sniff his way around the edges of those auction houses, and he started to buy just a couple of modest things. In the end, in 1967, he returns to Adelaide and to the family business, and he still doesn't settle. But somebody suggested to him, it really kind of broke his heart to actually come back from England at that time. And someone suggested to Max, well, why don't you, in your VW Beetle, drive over to Melbourne and go through the Lawson sales and the Joel sales and have a look there and see what you might find. So, of course, that's exactly what he did for several years. And I guess at this point I just want to tell you, I found this little funny story this morning, so I'm going to share it with you. On one of his journeys in his Beetle across to Melbourne, he noted that there was an advertisement in 1968 for a house sale. And it piqued his interest because in that house sale were a number of Von Gerards as part of the assignment, consignment, if you like. Many people in 1968 didn't really know who Von Gerard was. Anyway, he said, this is Max Carter speaking, he said it was a house sale. It was quite funny because you would have a peg basket, a Von Gerard, a fire hose, a set of cups and saucers, and another Von Gerard. And he says, there was a lady I was bidding against. There were four Von Gerards in the sale. And he said, I was bidding against a lady. I had no idea if she was an agent or a private bidder, but I bid her up and they got 2,000 for the first Von Gerard and the same for the second and the third. And Max says, I was getting quite disillusioned and more anxious. He says, I went out and bought a sandwich for lunch and it felt like eating poison. He said, I was so upset. I pulled myself together and thought the one in the afternoon was really the one I had wanted in the first place. So I came back after lunch and she, the lady, was not there. And I got my Von Gerard. And that is the work, Waterfall on the Clyde River, Tasmania, which is actually just down in Gallery 3A on display. Notably, when he gifted it to the gallery, he dedicated it to a Dr. A. Aldersley. That is Algernon Aldersley, who walked with him in 1937 as a 12-year-old in from Prospect and brought him into the gallery. It was Algernon's idea. So he later dedicated the Von Gerard to his friend Algernon. Back to the restless years, and he really declared himself as being like a Dickens character, Mr. Micawber, really waiting for something to turn up. And so in the end, he went back. He had at this point, I won't complicate it, but he had been kind of collared, headhunted for the gallery board when Hans Heisen passed away. Max Carter replaced Hans Heisen on the board in 1968, but Max Carter resigned from that position and took himself back to England. And he stayed there nearly 9-10 years and eventually settled back in Adelaide in about 1979. He came back for family reasons. His sister had been widowed. His parents were becoming frail. So in comes Max back to Adelaide. And this is where finally the stars align for Mr. Micawber, because in 1982, he met the gallery's new curator, Ron Radford, and they got on like a house on fire. And they shared interests in Australian art and interests in forming a very clear vision for the Australian collection here at the Art Gallery. And in many ways, the rest was history. From 1982, Max did engage deeply with the gallery. Our beautiful security staff knew Max well. Our volunteers knew Max well. He was on our board in the end for a number of 17 years. And he really fulfilled a leading role in his engagement with the public. And over a 50-year period, he added 200 works to the Australian Art Collection to create one of the finest Australian art collections and most balanced, if you like, in the nation. In 1992, Gallery 1 of this wing that we are standing in today, Gallery 1 was named in Max's honour, MJM Carter Gallery. You'll see his name up above the doorway. So what I would like to just, I guess, share with you is also my relationship with Max as a curator. It was obviously, I knew Max for around 30 years of that 50 years, and it was a great privilege to work alongside him because he always was so enthusiastic and so informed, and I had the great privilege really to oversee many of those 200 paintings into the collection. I first met Max in 1993. I was a very junior curator, and his exhibition, the MJM Carter Collection, had just opened, literally in this space that we're standing in. And when I first met him, I said, oh, you know, Max, I absolutely love your Arthur Streeton painting, Impressions of the Deep. And from that moment, we just hit it right off. It is a painting by Arthur Streeton from 1889, the year of the very famous 9x5 exhibition. And it too is currently on display over in Gallery 3B up on the wall. And it is a scene of waves crashing in on the shore. So it is full of energy and life and effervescence. You know, the waves are frothing. And so we both loved this painting, and we both loved it too because when you have a close look at it, you can literally see how the sand whipped up by the waves and the wind has adhered to the wet painted surface. So in a minute, I would urge you to have a little look for the painting up on the wall behind you and see you know, your response to that work. But it was a work that really seared my relationship with Max. Now, interestingly, Max always had a hunch about where that work was painted. Max was buying works in the 1970s, 1980s, we must remember, at a time when documentation really wasn't, there wasn't a lot of documentation, let's say. So we never knew the exact location of the Arthur Streeton painting. One day I returned to my desk and there was a whole range of handwritten, Max would always leave us handwritten notes about different things, and there was these sort of exasperated notes on my desk to me in 2014. So we're moving forward to 2014. He'd received a letter from the Bass Coast Council. Max would write prolifically letters to people, handwrite letters. He'd written to the Bass Coast Council, and finally, they confirmed the location of where Arthur Streeton was standing when he painted this work in 1889. And it was a place called Foots Beach near San Remo, so a famous surfing beach apparently. And the view looks towards Cape Woolamai on Phillip Island. And so Max was like the cat that got the cream, you know, because finally we could solve that puzzle. And he always had a fantastic kind of twinkle in his eye when we could find more information out. This kind of brings me to also really the moving on to 2016. And in 2016, Max celebrated his 90th birthday. And to mark this occasion and also to mark 50 years of collecting, he decided to gift to us the kind of cherry on the pie of his collection, which is this lovely, beautiful Charles Conder painting. It was one of the last works he donated to the Australian collection in his lifetime. And he knew very well it was one of my favourites. It was almost like a game, a bit of a tease that he'd just keep hanging on to it. In fact, it had been on inward loan to the gallery since 1981. And so the gallery had to wait 35 years before it actually formally came to us. And often as I mentioned, he wrote many handwritten notes. In a note to me once about himself, he said, "One must have patience." And so he certainly tested that. He had bought this beautiful painting by Charles Conder actually in 1976 from a Christie's sale in Melbourne. And immediately you put in your mind about this travelling in the back of a VW Beetle across from Melbourne to Adelaide. So it's kind of shocking to think about today. A monograph on Charles Conder had been published in 1973, and knowing the very well-read Max Carter, he probably was aware of the new scholarship on Charles Conder and had a very, as I said at the beginning, a sharp eye, picked this up for sale in 1976. It's certainly one of the most admired works in the Australian art collection. It's much loved. And it's very much art historically significant. So it's a rare French symbolist subject by Charles Conder. And one of the most important works that Charles Conder painted in Giverny in the 1890s. Now, I love it for so many reasons that I've kind of run out of paper. One of the reasons I really love this work is it's by one of Australian art's most enigmatic artist, and of course one of our most famous artists associated with the Heidelberg School, or better known as Australian Impressionism. Charles Conder was rakish, handsome, sociable to the extreme, sensitive, bohemian, an orphan of sorts, and forever in debt. I'm thinking he's complete opposite to Max Carter. But Charles Conder left Australia in 1890. He established a studio in Montmartre, and he became very established within Paris at that time. And it's very famous that we know one of his closest friends was Toulouse-Lautrec, who regarded Charles Conder's paintings as absolutely lovely, and he thought Charles Conder was one of the most notable people in Montmartre at that time. Charles Conder enjoyed the entertainments of Le Moulin Rouge, Le Chat Noir, and so forth, and he also had a weakness for absinthe and the delights of cabaret life. Oscar Wilde wrote that Charles Conder had a very elusive manner. He was very hard to kind of pin down and get to know. And in a way, Conder really painted the way he lived. He painted the fleeting moment, the unspoken word, and the nuanced feeling. In 1909, Charles Conder slipped away into syphilitic madness. And he died in his 40th year. He was our artist who painted our golden summers, but he was also hugely successful in Paris, exhibited at the new Salon, the new English Art Club. And interestingly, 4 years after he died, Charles Conder was also included in that very famous Armory show in New York in 1913. His works were included, and goes to show that that milestone exhibition, you know, he was obviously worthy of that. And of course, that Armory show was the same show that Marcel Duchamp's nude Descending the Staircase was shown and was so shocking. So he's a perfect example of an Australian artist who had impact around the world. But what I really love about this painting is the fact that Charles Conder has really depicted, it's an homage to the prince of Impressionism, Claude Monet. And Charles Conder frequently left Paris in spring and summer to go to this region in Giverny to paint. And of course, this is the very vicinity of where Claude Monet lived. And there is a note in a letter of one of Charles Conder's friends where they talk about seeing Claude Monet in the distance pushing his wheelbarrow loaded up with canvases going out to paint the setting sun. Now, it's very much, this painting is a nod to the master. And I love the way that instead of using colour and light to dissolve form, which was the point of Claude Monet, Charles Conder has done this all his own in terms of he's created, focused in on sensuous form and using colour and form as an agent to express what I was talking about earlier, this idea of mood and feeling. And he draws us in by our senses. You note here too that we have some birds just taking off from a tree. It's a very moody painting and very beautiful. For me, it is as though Conder has switched the green, teal, misty landscapes of Heidelberg's Yarra Valley to these creamy, dreamy pastels of Giverny. You know how on your phone camera you can change your filters? But it exemplifies a characteristic of Conder's work in its detachment. Conder is not interested in stories and narrative or specificities of place. He's interested in the general feeling. And he wrote to a friend, Charles Conder wrote to a friend about his love for landscape. And he said, "Think of one thing. What wonderful invention landscape is, how it employs one's time, keeps still, has no exciting effect on the nerves, and then you will do as I do. I believe that men seem small beside it. Think of the soothing effect. Don't you feel it in the evening?" Ooh, delicious quote, isn't it? He absolutely seduces you in. Speaking of seduction, is what I love about this too, is it was painted at a time when Charles Conder was in love. He was under the spell of a very wealthy Irish-American woman by the name of Louise. And she apparently was fair-haired and dove-like. And Charles Conder, at this very time he's painting this, was kind of really wanting to make his moves. And he was intersected by a friend and also Louise's older sister, because our wonderful Charles was not really the quite right match, if you like. He didn't have any wealth and unfortunately had been to too many cabarets, if you like. So he was not suitable. The other thing I absolutely adore about this painting is what you will all notice up in the sky is this beautiful floating cloud. And apparently Giverny in the summer and spring, the barometric atmosphere is very particular. There's a lot of kind of white light. And I think certainly Conder has picked up on that. But again, a friend of Conder, Conder was constantly surrounded, by the way, with friends. Always, almost neurotically, had to have people around him, being somewhat of an orphan. A friend of his wrote of their beautiful time in Giverny, and he wrote, "Huge clouds stood still as marble in the summer sky." And so I think this cloud formation, this cumulus cloud, was obviously, was true, you know, literally there, but he's turned it into quite a beautiful symbolist form. The final reason I really love, we're getting there, I really love this work is it's painted by someone we have in our minds as famously Australian and a household name here in Australia. He was the artist that hung out with Tom Roberts and Arthur Streeton up in Heidelberg. He was the artist that sort of cooked the chops, lamb chops in the bush, and of course painted Australian art's, one of Australian art's most famous works, Holiday at Mentone, a beach scene. But Charles Conder was not born here. He did not die here. He was here only 6 years of his whole life. He left in 1890, as I mentioned earlier, and he never came back. But he's the epitome of an Australian artist because he's neither here nor there. He's itinerant and in reality an artist of the world. The good news is, in the story of Charles Condor, is that in 1901 he married someone rich. So the last 8 years of his life were on the up. But a friend described Charles Condor sitting in his elegant London home on Cheyne Walk, Chelsea. And I'll read the quote to you. Swathed in a cloud of cigarette smoke. He smoked more than 60 cigarettes a day. Charles had the distant expression of one who would get drunk on port from morning to night, and who, in an opium smoker's delirium, believed that from his Chelsea window he looked out not only on the Thames, but also on India and Australia. For me, in a way, Max Carter did the same in reverse. He looked out from Australia to England, to India, Japan, and China. So like Charles Condor, Max Carter saw his home as not different or separate, but as a connected part of the consciousness of the larger world. Thanks to the prescience, vision, and largesse of individuals like Max Carter, we can share with the next little 12-year-old who walks through here that their world is big, and that we in Australia, for all our cultural complexities, belong to a living whole. And thanks to Max, we can keep telling these stories to keep our collections relevant, accessible, and our culture alive. On that, I will just conclude and say that Max's story is a really big one. It's a really important one, and it was a struggle for me today actually to compress everything down. But I would like to let you know that the gallery is giving a memorial, staging a memorial event in honour of Max Carter on, I think it's May the 23rd, and information is available through our membership office if you would like to attend. So that's the end of my little story about Max and Charles. And so I will now hand over back to public programs. I think there's time for questions. Good question. Charles Condor was born in Middlesex, England, but soon after he was born, the family spent most of their life actually in India. And he spent his first 5 years living in India. Then his mother died and he was sent back to England. And his father continued to work in India, hence the kind of orphan mentality, if you like. So born in England, grew up in India and England. Then he was sort of, at 15 years of age, he was sent out to Australia to assist his uncle, who was the Surveyor General of New South Wales, and he surveyed parts of New South Wales, which is why also he has that connection to landscape. But 15 being sent out to Australia, pretty wild. So, yeah, in England. Any other questions? Thank you so much for your attention. Thank you.